one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. During the 41 years from 1929 through 1969, I gave a lot of effort and time to civic, charitable, religious, and government activities as follows. While heading a successful construction company, founder and first president of Good Government Groups, 1942 through 1952, this was the forerunner of the Citizens League. Next, I was founder and first president of the Citizens League, 1952. Then I was founder and first president of CORG, Citizens Organized for Responsible Government, 1956 through 1963. I was president of Goodwill Industries. I was vice president and member of the Board of Trustees of Asbury Methodist Hospital for 15 years. I was on the board of directors of the Salvation Army, the Board of Trustees of Hennepin Avenue Methodist Church, Chairman of Social Action Commission, Hennepin Avenue Methodist Church, Member of Finance Commission, Hennepin Avenue Methodist Church, Board of Stewards, Hennepin Avenue Methodist Church, Board of Trustees of YWCA, Boys Work Committee of Central YMCA, Board of Trustees of Minnesota Methodist Conference, Fair Employment Practices Commission of Minneapolis, Minneapolis Mayor's Council on Human Relations, Secretary of Harvard Club of Minnesota, Board of Directors of Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce, Board of Directors of Associated Industries, Board of Directors of Rotary Club, and member of Rotary Club for, well, let's see, how many years? From 1936, I joined the Rotary Club, and it is now 1984. That sounds like about 84 subtract 36. Uh, 48 years I've been a member of the Rotary Club of Minneapolis. I was a member of the board of directors of the Lafayette Club. In addition to being president and board chairman of James Leck Company for 41 years and president of Leck Company, which is a construction company and investment company, and also president of Waverly Construction Company since its founding, I was a member of the Minnetonka Club from 1952 to 1984. Let's see, 52, 84, that's 32 years. And I was a member of the Minneapolis Golf Club for 10 years before I joined the Minnetonka. And I was a member of the Lafayette Club for 30 years. Each I married Virginia, or I mean Mildred and I were married on June 2nd, 1927. I was 25 years old. In 1930, 3 years after we were married, we had our first child, Jean. And in 1933, we had Stuart. And in 1935, we had Susan. And in 1941, we had Nancy. Each of Mildred and my four children attended private secondary schools and Eastern colleges, all of which costs were paid by their parents rather than aids or scholarship money from others. From the above tabulation of activities, it should be noted that Mildred and Stuart, in practice of their religion, gave generous contributions of time, talent, and money toward the improvement of society. They believed that they and their family should be part of the solution of the problems of society, not a part of the problem. They and their close social friends decided in 1942 to quit complaining about government and substitute effective action to rectify the causes of complaint. During the 40s and 50s, they and their friends aggressively acted according to their motto. Their motto was, instead of beefing, let's act. For the history of good government groups of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Rochester, and the history of the Citizens League, and the history of CORG, see documents on these subjects now on file in my home. From the time I was 5 years old until I was 12 years old, our home was illuminated with gas manufactured by the Lex in their basement. From the time I was 9 years old to 12 years old, I was assigned the chore of manufacturing the gas. From the time I and my brother James were 9 years old until we went to east to college, we operated the heating plant in the home, which involved shoveling coal into the furnace at least 2-4 times a day, removing clinkers and ashes every morning. One should conclude that all of the Lex mentioned in these tapes had happy lives, filled every day with hard work, diligent, intelligent action to provide services or products which others would purchase. The reader should you should conclude that all of the Lex had lots of fun mixed with the satisfaction of years well spent, lives with a worthy purpose, where our abilities, power, and influence blessed us, blessed members of our family and society. From the time I was 9 years old until I was 18 years old when I went east to college, my brother James and I had the job of shoveling all the sidewalks and the driveways clear of snow every winter. Every summer, we were assigned the job of mowing all of our extensive lawns and the cultivating of our gardens and other landscape work around the house. 4 of this work, my father paid us anywhere from 10 cents an hour when we were 9 years old to 25 cents an hour, and then to $1 an hour. All of this money we could spend any way we wanted to. We also chopped wood and stacked same in the basement. We also sawed wood with a buck saw, for all of which services my father paid us in cash. I have very fond memories of my married life with Mildred and our family life as the 4 children developed. The first 2 years of my marriage to Mildred were the last 2 years of my father's life. We were prosperous, Mildred and I, with a $650 per month salary for me, and although I worked intensively 5 1/2 days per week and some nights until midnight when a bid was being submitted, yet we had a gay social life, evenings and weekends, with the Slocums, the Caswells, the Mars, the Crispins, and other newlyweds, with the parties held at our homes and at the University Club at 802 Mount Curve. Mildred was very attractive and popular. The next year, after my father's death, we operated on a tight, restricted budget. with more night estimating for me, and a sink or swim tension in my work as head of the company, as my father was no longer present to help me when obstacles confronted me. Near the end of that year, 1929, the tensions let up considerably when it became apparent that our first year after my father's death would be a financial and business success. And the outlook for 1930 was bright due to Mr. Struthers and the other customers who awarded us contracts to build buildings. The next year, 1930, was a prosperous year, and although we worked hard and long hours, yet we were happy and gay, and we started to save chunks of money. Our first child, Jean, was born, and we lived in our California-style house on the shore of Gray's Bay of Lake Minnetonka. We financed the house with our own cash, plus a first mortgage from Thorpe Brothers and a second mortgage held by my mother. We were active in Knox Presbyterian Church from 1927 to 1932, where we both were adult leaders of the high school and college youth. I was a Sunday school teacher of 12-year-old boys, and I was a church trustee. During those years, I was a director of the Salvation Army, member of YMCA Committee of Management of Boys Division. I was a very active money raiser for the YMCA. All of these activities lasted through 1930 through 1934. I loaned $1,000 to a social friend who had been wiped out financially. Many of our friends were practically broke due to the Depression, but not quite broke, whereas Mars, Slocum, Caswell, and others like ourselves were struggling in an upward direction. We were more fortunate than many of our friends. Our family life in 1932 and 1933 was busy and gay. We tore down our California-style home and built our new four-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath Georgian colonial house on Gray's Bay in 1932. We used our cash, a first and second mortgage, to finance it. Stuart, our son, was born in 1933, and Susan was born in 1935, and Nancy in 1941. During 1932 and 1933, we gave financial help to several unemployed neighbors. We joined Hennepin Avenue Methodist Church in 1932.
Second tenor, Elwin Luring. Both
Minnesota. I thought this was an excellent idea, as I love singing, especially with other male voices, like the Harvard Glee Club. In fact, I liked it so well that I took a job singing in the Gethsemane Episcopal Church Choir during those years, also the Wesley Church Choir. And while in college, I, besides singing in the Glee Club, I sang in the choir of the New England Theological Seminary Chapel in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Singing was great fun, especially when you could make beautiful harmony, as we did in the Aryan Male Quartet for the years 1924 through 1926. We performed over the radio, WCCO. We performed at the auto show. And we performed in the Knox Presbyterian Church and many other places, most of which places paid us for our appearance. We had a very good male quartet, if I do say so myself, as shouldn't. When I became intensely interested in Mildred Clark, I dropped all singing because it took up too much of my time, which I wanted to devote to Mildred. Mildred and I were married for 30 years, from June 2nd, 1927 to July 15th, 1957. We had a beautiful married life together, but we had several rough spots which we had to surmount. I like to recall how Mildred's mother and father acted when we had one of these rough spots. After we had been married about 2 years, one of the really rough spots took place. I forget some of the details, but it went something like this. Apparently, I did or said something which hurt Mildred's feelings quite badly. And as we discussed the incident back and forth. Things did not improve. In fact, the more we talked back and forth to each other on that subject, the more estranged we became. While we were out driving around in our car, trying to resolve the difficulty, Mildred finally gave up on the whole idea and said to me, "I want you to take me right now to my mother and father's apartment. I'm all through with you." So I turned the car toward Mildred's mother's apartment. Mildred started talking to her mother and father, telling her how impossible I had been, and that she wanted to leave me and move back into it with her mother and father. Of course, I had pleaded with her not to do that before we started for her mother and father's apartment. To no avail. When Mildred completed her presentation to mother and father of the situation and of her desire to throw in the sponge as far as I was concerned, her mother and father said that they did not want her to move back into the house with them, that this would be impossible, that they would oppose it very much, and that we should go back home. And no matter how long it took us to resolve our differences, we should stay with it, because it was absolutely out of the question that we should be separated. They, of course, asked me how I felt about it. And after considerable talk by mother, father, Mildred, and me, we decided to do what the mother and father said, go back home, have sex, make up whatever is wrong, and be determined to live together and forgive each other and try again. This we did. And a day later, things had been straightened out between us, and we were back on the track. On another occasion, in our early married life, we almost broke up. So this time, Mildred told my brother how impossible it was to get along with me. Here again, my brother came to the rescue and said to Mildred that he knew that I was impossible at times, but that I meant well and that I loved her and that he hoped that she would forgive me and that we would get together, iron out our differences, and live happily ever after. This help from my brother and from my mother-in-law and father-in-law made things straighten out, and most of our married life after those two incidents was very loving and kind to each other. Furthermore, our family was coming along, and that had a beneficial effect, so that our relationships were very satisfactory in the last 90% of our marriage. When Mildred died of myoblastic leukemia, an incurable disease, that was on July 15th, 1957. That left me with three unmarried children and one married child, namely Jean. And we had two large houses, one at Lake Minnetonka and one at 2101 Franklin Avenue. This meant that we had to keep the system operating. We couldn't just quit. So I put an ad in the paper for a housekeeper. And I also told the president of Augsburg College, who was a good friend of mine, about my predicament, and he offered the idea that perhaps the personnel department at Augsburg would have a young married couple who might turn out to be good housekeepers for me. So I had a lot of responses to my ad in the paper. They came to my office and I interviewed them. Finally, I worked it down to two different women, who answered the ad in the paper and who had had a great deal of experience at housekeeping. And I had a couple of young people, man and wife, who were doing graduate work at Augsburg College, who thought they would like to have the job. I had these two women and the young couple come out to our house at Lake Minnetonka one Sunday afternoon at 1 hour intervals, where the three children who were at home and I interviewed them further so that the children could have something to say about who should be the housekeeper. They didn't like the older women. They told me that I should hire the young couple from Augsburg College. This I did, and they turned out to be very satisfactory for the period leading up to the time that I married Virginia. Now I'd like to tell you about Virginia. But before Virginia came on the scene, I had dates with about six different widows at different times, starting about in June. One of the widows lived in Wellesley, Massachusetts. I met her at the 35th reunion of my class of 1923 at Harvard in early June of that year. There were another out-of-town widow, and also a few in-town widows. And then one night I went to a meeting of the 13 Club with Clifford Anderson, who said he would pick me up at my house, 2101 Franklin Avenue, and take me to the meeting at one of the other members' houses. After the meeting, Clifford Anderson and I started for home in Clifford's car. About halfway home, Clifford said, Stuart, are you starting to have some dates? And I said, yes, I had had several. Well, he said, we would like, Kay, my wife, and I would like to have you have a blind date with a very good friend of ours. In fact, Virginia Calhoun Paler, who we would like to have you meet, is Kay Anderson's best friend. We were wondering if you would like to have a blind date when she comes through the city of Minneapolis on her way from New York to Seattle, where she lives. I told Clifford that I would like that. So the Andersons soon told me the day that I would first meet Virginia, which was in August of 1958. About 5:30 in one afternoon, Clifford and Kay picked me up at my home and took me over to Virginia's sister's house, which was located at 27th Street and Bryant Avenue South. Cliff and I left Kay in the car at the curb in front of the house, and we went into the living room of Virginia's sister, Betty Groot. After waiting a short time, Virginia appeared on the scene. I was very pleased with Virginia right from the start. I thought she was beautiful. After exchanging a few pleasantries, Clifford, Virginia, and I left the sister's house and started for the car out at the curb, where sat Kay waiting for us to show up. Virginia and I walked ahead of Clifford, and we were told afterwards that behind our backs, Clifford put his forefinger in touch with his thumb, making a circle, and shook his hand so that his wife Kay could see by that high sign that their plans to get Stuart and Virginia together was a big success so far. Well, Virginia and I sat in the back seat and Cliff and Kay in the front seat of Clifford's car, and Clifford took us out to the Old Log Theater, which is near Excelsior on Lake Minnetonka, where we had a very enjoyable evening with dinner and theater. During the picnic dinner, I had a good chance to get acquainted with Virginia, and I right away decided that this was a very successful blind date. In fact, it was so successful that at that evening, when we returned Virginia to her sister's house, I asked Virginia for a date the next evening. She said she'd like to have a date with me the next evening. This was very successful, and we were getting better and better acquainted, and I was getting to like Virginia more and more. So then after that second date, I asked Virginia for a date to go sailing on Lake Minnetonka the next afternoon. She said that she would like to go. So all the next morning she was busy with her sister rounding up suitable clothes for a sailing party, including tennis shoes, oh, and all kinds of things that she didn't have with her, of course. She got tennis shoes from her niece, other clothes from her sister, and they borrowed from all kinds of people so that Virginia could go sailing with Stuart. We arrived at my house at Lake Minnetonka, and we went down to the dock and took the cover off the sailboat